Welcome to the Steve Miller Podcast, where we sit down with some of North Central PA's most talented and prolific artists, discuss their musical journeys, and talk about all things music. My guest tonight is Andy Hare. You may know him from Among Thy Saints, Kissing Booth, Faith in Exile, Hands Resist, and As Each Day Dies. Check him out on Instagram at ohare66. How you doing, Andy?
Not too bad, man.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So what we're doing tonight is we're going to go over the story of kind of you being a musician locally, how you got to where you're at. You could give me every embarrassing detail if you choose. That's entirely up to you. So let's start from the very beginning.
Sure.
Early music memory, influence.
So my brothers are much older than I am. So Okay. Like I'm 37. My youngest brother to me is 14 years older than I am.
Oh, wow.
So, and then my two older brothers beyond him are another year and 2 years beyond him, too. So, like, when I was little, I remember my brothers taking me around when they were tail end of high school or coming out of high school. Like, my one brother, Dave, I remember he just joined the Marines and bought a Firebird. And so, like, we'd cruise around his Firebird listening to, like, Guns N' Roses. And
stuff. Oh,
and that
man.
Was kind of, like, the first, and I was, like, five. So that was like one of the biggest, like, first precursors of music. Like Aerosmith and Guns N' Roses were probably like my first favorite bands.
Yeah.
When growing up. And then I remember when what was it, 90, 91, whenever Wayne's World came out. And
oh my god. 91. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
So I was like six, seven, eight, something like that. I don't know what 83. Yeah, it's like 7 or 8. But I was obsessed with Bohemian Rhapsody. So, like, the whole world. So, but he gave me a Queen Greatest Hits tape.
Oh, yeah.
And that started off, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, what's going on here? Because I joke with my wife sometimes, like, when Bohemian Rhapsody came out and she was, like, all about Queen, I'm like, you didn't know this? I'm like, I've been listening to Queen since I was, like, five.
Yeah, me too, man. And that was, fun fact, that was, like, it was a number one hit when it came out, and it was number one hit again in, like, 91.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre.
Especially, like, look back, like, what? You want to put on an opera song? What? Then, like, there was, like, contention over that. I read the story. Like, Mike Myers, like, we're not doing it if we can't use Bohemian Rhapsody. Like,
really?
They wanted to use a Guns N' Roses song.
Really?
And Mike Myers, like, no, we're using Bohemian Rhapsody. We're not doing it.
That's beautiful.
So, like, that's how they, like, ended up wedging it in.
And I love Guns N' Roses. I love Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it being any other way.
Yeah, exactly. But after that, I think one of my biggest influence music-wise was my neighbor. He was the same age as I am, but he had a sister that was a few years older than us.
Okay.
So, like, we'd be playing in his basement next door, and she'd be, like, doing down there, too, but listening to Metallica and like, Megadeth and stuff like that. So I kind of got that metal bug early on.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously, Enter Sandman came out around that time. But then, like, one was, like, I remember hearing one when I was, like, six years old. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
And it just kind of clicked from there.
Is that, like, a moment for you, I would imagine, where it's kind of like there's no turning back? I listened to, like, Bon Jovi and Aerosmith and shit until I heard punk. And
yeah.
It was, like, I was floored. Do you know what I mean?
I did not
know music could do that, and I would imagine it was probably
So I had a few different, like, awakenings of, like, my musical, like...
Detail.
So the first was, like I said, like I've already just talked about, and the Metallica. And then when I was in, like, fourth grade, my best friend at the time, Paul, he lived over by Pineview Acres. He had two older brothers. So we were like, what? How old are you in fourth grade? Like 10?
Yeah, like a little younger, yeah.
So one of my earliest things of extreme metal, I was introduced by his brother who had the Cannibal Corpse Butchered at Birth poster on his door to his bedroom. And so I had an early introduction to Cannibal Corpse, and I'm like, what is this? I didn't, like, dive into it at that point because I was, you know, not buying things for myself yet. There's no way in hell my mom was buying me a Cannibal Corpse CD or tape when I was like 10.
Right.
Because she didn't like music with bad words. I'm like, I can't understand these. But, like, you know, I don't think asking her to buy me Tomb of the Mutilated at, like, the Wall would have worked.
It's a great album, though.
Yeah. But, you know, kind of like a corpse going down on another corpse wouldn't probably fly too well for my mom.
It's understandable. Yeah. As a parent, I could see that.
So I remember, like, getting introduced to, like, Cannibal Corpse and Suffocation and, like, Morbid Angel and stuff
that.
So, but I didn't really know, but, like, I liked it. I'm like, I didn't know why. I'm like, this is really cool. I thought the vocals were cool. Like, I don't know, obviously know what the hell he's saying.
Chris
Barnes and, but, like, the riffs and just how aggressive it was awesome. So then I kind of went to a different spiral few years later, obviously, like, the 90s scene had exploded. And
like the alternative thing?
Yeah, yeah, okay. So, like, then Nirvana. I was always drawn to Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and stuff, too.
Sure.
Because, like, back then, I mean, they still played that stuff on the radio.
Right? Mm-hmm.
Got really into the grunge stuff. I never really loved Nirvana. Like, they weren't my favorite. Like, Alice in Chains was probably my top. And Soundgarden. I always loved STP, too. Like, I just, yeah, like, got some Weiland swagger. And, like, that stuff was really cool. But the first CD I ever bought for myself, that was a Weezer Blue album.
That's awesome. Yeah. That was one of my first four.
Yeah, I remember seeing, like, the Buddy Holly video, yeah, on MTV. And I'm like, this is awesome.
It is awesome.
And then I bought that and had, like, President of the United States of America and stuff. And just, like, those, like, weird alternative bands. So I kind of listened between then, you know, the Pantera. And
okay.
Gotten Anthrax and Slayer.
Damn. Really got right in there.
Yeah. But I think I used to love, like, the BMG and, like, the Columbia House.
Yeah.
So, like, I'd be like, oh, give me all the Pantera albums. So, like, I would just go find all the metal and bring it to me.
That's hilarious.
And so I was, like, you know, 12, 13, 14, like, with just giant CD collections building up. And then the, like, Korn and stuff happened. And I was into Korn and stuff for, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And like, Limp Bizkit and stuff, because I didn't know any better. I mean, I kind of want to go back and listen to some, like, Limp Bizkit. No, right. I can't get past Fred Durst's voice anymore. But, like, I kind of want to go back to listen to Korn and just kind of give it a second chance. But it's kind of – it was a nice stepping stone, I think, because, like, yeah, almost immediately after that, I discovered, like, the Deftones.
Yeah.
And Nothing Face. And so, like, going into high school, those bands were starting to creep up.
Right.
A buddy of mine, he's 2 years older than me, he was telling me about – like, this Victory Records sampler he got.
Oh, boy.
So, like, he gave me this Victory Records sampler. I actually found it the other day. I still have this CD.
This is awesome.
And it's, like, Hatebreed and Snapcase and Earth Crisis and Strife and Integrity and all those old school, like, well, like, new school, I guess, hardcore, bridging on, like, the early metalcore bands.
Yes.
And now I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
So, like, I really got into, like, the Hatebreed and Strife and Earth Crisis, even though I wasn't, like, a hardcore vegan straight edge or anything.
Yeah. How old about were you at this time?
It's just about 15, 16.
I'm even surprised that, like, Korn even caught your attention, because, like, you're, like, fucking deep in the cut.
Yeah, like,
there.
Well, like, a lot of my friends were listening to right. it. Like, I'd see my friends with, like, their, like, Korn shirts on, so I'm like, what's this? And, like, but, like, you know, it was before the internet. It was, yeah, like, it was before Napster, like,
right,
really happened. Like, it was very early internet. So, like, there was hard to find music if you didn't stay up. Like, I loved staying up watching, like, Headbangers Ball. And,
absolutely.
Like, 120 minutes. On, like,
120 minutes is amazing.
Yeah, and then, plus, like, Heather was, like, my best friend,
yeah,
growing up, too, and, like, he was always into metal, so I got a lot of my Anthrax, Megadeth, Slayer, Pantera from him, really.
He's hilarious. He is strictly metal and, like, nothing else.
Oh, yeah, no.
He has no idea who Cardi B is. Like, it's fucking hilarious.
No, it's just Heather, metal.
I love it.
But, yeah, so, like, we've been friends since, like, sixth grade, so, like, I grew up kind of with him with the music.
Yeah.
So, like, we kind of went on the same path, but I got into more, not that I never ventured away from that stuff, but, like, into the hardcore stuff.
I gotcha.
That kind of was a new one. And then when the, like, internet kind of exploded, then I discovered, like, Swedish death metal. And it was just kind of At the Gates, In Flames,
oh, yeah,
Dark Tranquility, like, all those, like, Swedish death bands. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
So I quickly abandoned the Korn and Limp Bizkit train.
I don't blame you. That
and,
makes,
like,
total sense.
The Linkin Park. I never got into them. I couldn't do the rap metal. I hated it.
Yeah, same here. I went along with it. I faked it for a little bit because I was playing music with other people that wanted to play that stuff. So I did, but when I heard In Flames, I was like, oh, boy.
Yeah, like, I remember when I finally had a computer that I could download music on.
Yeah.
It was, like, the first time I remember downloading on, like, what, fucking 14.4? Like, I got, like, episode 666 playing In Flames. I'm like, what is this? And I made all these, like, mixtapes that I could.
That's
like,
awesome.
Recording them from my computer, like, to a stereo.
Beautiful.
It's terrible, but.
No, it's awesome.
It was amazing.
What a wonderful time. I mean, it's nostalgic.
Yeah.
A couple episodes ago, we were talking about reading the liner notes
to,
like,
yeah,
find other bands because,
oh, yeah,
you didn't have, and also chancing it on a CD. You might have heard a song and it really clicked for you, and then you just bought the whole CD,
oh,
not,
yeah,
knowing what you're getting.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Sometimes wasting $14.
Oh, yeah, that was, I remember Blur when that came out.
Song two.
Yeah. Like, this song's awesome.
Yeah.
Says, like, 13-year-old Andy, and then I buy the CD. I'm like, what the hell is this shit?
Britpop.
I'm like, it's terrible. I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
The CD was awful.
It grew on me, but I know exactly,
you know what's
what you're
funny?
Saying.
Going back and listening to it now, I'd probably enjoy it.
Yeah,
but
it
just
did grow on me, but I had to listen to it 100 times. When you're first coming up, well, what drew you first? Did you want to play guitar? Did you want to be a front man?
I originally wanted to play guitar when I was younger because my same friend that I talked about that I lived next door to, like, he got a guitar at one point, started going to lessons. I'm like, I really want to play guitar. And my parents didn't, like, they're not really music inclined. Like, they like country and crap like that. But, okay. Like, we had an acoustic guitar, and my mom would always give the excuse, oh, well, we have to get it strung. And then, like, it sucks knowing, like, how easy that is. Yeah. and how cheap it is. Like, I could have done that. But but that would always be the excuse, is that, oh, we need to get it strung for you. I'm like, all right, well. So I didn't play for a long time. And then I was like probably 15 or 16. A buddy of mine started playing guitar.
Okay.
And like just picking it up, like I just, something just drew me to it. And I kept bugging him, like, I want a guitar. And my mom's like, no, we can't afford it right now. I'm like, yeah. Okay, whatever. So a buddy of mine, he had like a crappy acoustic that he's like, I don't play it. My mom has it. Do you want it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So it's this piece of shit, beat up acoustic that like part of the nut was broken on the low E string. So like I had like a piece of paper wedged in there so it would like keep the strings tight. So he gave me that. I learned how to tune it up and everything. And then I learned how to kind of read tabs. Like I'd be able to figure out, like once I learned how to tune it, I would just kind of try to pick out things that, and try to play it.
Yeah.
And then once the internet was a thing, like I was able to go get some tabs.
Get whatever you want. Yeah.
So like I started kind of looking at tabs and I didn't take it really seriously for the first few years.
Yeah. Do you remember what you played first? Do you remember?
The first ever I learned was the intro to One. Because it's actually, it's pretty easy. Like the dan 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 dan.
What a great introduction to guitar playing.
And then after trying the rest, I'm like, oop, that's a little bit hard. But even going back now, I'm like, oh, I guess that was kind of easy. It's that hard. That's for awesome. A Metallica song. But my first electric was a piece of shit BC Rich Bronze Warlock.
Oh, nice.
It was like $150 in Musician's Friend. I'm like, Mom, this guitar's metal. Can you buy this for me?
What color?
Black.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I bought that. I got a little amp, and I kind of started playing a little bit more and getting better at, like, the basics. I was always drawn to more, like, rhythm players than, like, the shredders.
Yeah.
Plus, I guess, coming up on, like, the grunge stuff when there wasn't really a lot of shred and stuff going on.
Definitely not.
So, like, I love Dimebag and stuff, but, like, I'm more, like, Scott Ian was always, like, my guitar hero. And, like,
okay.
James Hetfield was, like, that freaking downstroke. I mean,
yeah.
Like, that solid rhythm was always what I grew up on. And I just, like, it kind of drew me to it more, especially as I got into more of the hardcore stuff, too, because it's, you know, just heavier punk.
Yeah, there's no leads in hardcore.
No, so... So I drew more to that, so which I kind of regret these days. Like when I went, actually finally decided to start taking lessons.
How old were you at that point?
Probably 18, 19 when I finally actually took guitar lessons.
Yeah.
I learned by tabs and I played by ear, but I'm like, you know what? I actually need to learn how to do this the right way. So I went to Tom Grice over here in Pally.
Yeah.
And
the Goose.
Yeah, old Goose. So I learned. I started learning all my basics and my actual theory and stuff like that, and I did really well there, and it really helped me get a jump back onto where I was going.
Nice.
But in high school, too, like, I always wanted to sing. Like, I was drawn to that, too. Like, guitar was kind of the second at that time.
Yeah.
But, like, I wanted to be Phil Anselmo. I wanted to be Chino Marino.
Sure.
So I would just, like, scream along to, like, crap, well, once I got my driver's license, driving around, and just, or I'd come home from school, and I would scream along to, like, music in my room.
Yeah.
Like, before my parents got home from work. So I learned how to scream early, and then my singing too. I'm like, I just kind of tried to mimic them, and it just worked.
That's awesome. So I'm going to assume you did not play music in like school band or anything.
No, I did not.
Okay. And you didn't do choir.
No.
No church choir, nothing like that. Okay, sweet.
No, I just like heavy, hard music, yeah. And I'm like, I want to do that.
That's awesome.
So after a while, like, me and my friends would be cruising around and listen to Pantera and stuff. And I'd be singing along. People start, like, my friends would be like, yo, dude, you sound awesome.
Yeah.
And then, like, it just kind of, some word got around that I could actually sing and scream. And so, like, that's when I kind of met Smurf. He's a year behind me, I think, in high school.
And at this point in time, 16, 17, you're not in a band yet?
No. Okay, good. I wasn't actually finally in a band that was playing until the year after I graduated high school.
Well, seg your way right into that. So you meet Smurf.
So I met Smurf, and I knew him. I met him through Header and stuff. And, like, we tried to get some stuff going, but it's, like, we used to mess around at his house. And right when his brother was just starting to learn drums, too. But just kind of, everything just kind of fizzled. Like, just, you know, we didn't take it seriously or anything like that. We're all still learning too, so
that's interesting.
Yeah, I would love to hear what it sounded like. Oh god, it was probably fucking terrible.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to just I think that's everybody's first is like making noise your friends, you know.
So that's pretty much what we did, and then I don't really remember the path that ended up to Twine. So, like, me and Smurf, we were friends, we were hanging out, trying to get stuff going, and then I got reached out to, I think, was it Chris Zinda that reached out to me? I think it was Chris Zinda or Matt Macaron reached out to me, because they, like, Matt Macaron, he had a band in high school, I forget what it was called, but he was with friends of, like, the Three or Smoke Machine guys and stuff like that, but he was a guitar player, and his buddy Josh Pogash, who actually lived right on the street somewhere. Actually, no, right on the Bacon Street going out of town. So I remember they were like, we heard you can sing, and I was like, yeah, what's up? And they're like, well, we're trying to start a band. I'm like, well, what are you thinking? And they're like, well, we want to do like Deftones and stuff. I'm like, yes. So I remember I had a, I think it might have been Heather's bass amp. I had a bass amp that we plugged a mic into.
Beautiful.
And I remember going to Josh Bogash's house and jamming My Own Summer.
Awesome.
And it just kind of went from there. And they wanted to, I kind of.
Who else in the band?
It was me, Chris Zinda, a dude named Matt Macaron, and Josh Bogash.
Bogash, okay. Yeah.
Bogash was a drummer in the school band. Macaron, I didn't honestly know he could play guitar, but he's like a football player dude and stuff. But we started jamming, so we started learning just a bunch of covers.
Yeah.
So we did like some Deftones. We did Metallica, Rage, like all those kinds of things.
Sweet.
But then I started taking it to a little bit more like, let's do some heavier stuff. So like, I think we're the first band ever around here. I mean, Faith and Exile on those one now, but did Nothing Face songs.
That's awesome.
And we did that for about a year or so, and then it kind of just, like, Pogash joined the Army. Macaron decided to go back to school, He, I guess, figured out what he wanted to be when he grew up.
Did this band have a name?
This is Twine.
This is Twine,
This is Twine, yes. So my first band, Twine. Our first show ever was at Hole of Hands in Pottsville.
Oh, man.
So I remember the first time we ever played.
You're not of drinking age, right?
No, we're awesome. Like 19. Freshly 19. And I remember our first show ever, like all my friends came, like my metal friends came out and stuff. You remember when it was Hole of Hands?
Yeah.
So the left-hand side of the bar, well, it was now Trimbilly, well, whatever
was,
now. But
yeah.
It was all covered in, like, mirrors hanging on the wall. I'm like, oh, no, this is going to be... like. And right as soon as we played, like, My Own Summer, like, everyone just started punching each other. And I'm like, oh, this is not going to be good.
In a house of mirrors.
Yeah. Luckily, nothing got broken somehow, but I'm like, this is awesome. We need to keep doing this.
That is awesome.
So then I remember we reached that... So, like I said, Smurf and I, we went separate ways. That's when he started, him and Heather, at Aquadama with his brother. And I want to say it was Mark McEnany on bass. But so it was us, Twine. So we were, like, the... new metal grungy type stuff. Smurf was more just straight metal,
right?
And then there was another band called No Name Basis. It was like your standard emo band.
Okay.
Who was in that? Drew Pavlik, and I forget who else was in the band, because Drew ended up singing for us eventually in Among Thy Saints.
What were they playing?
I honestly don't know, because I wasn't into that kind of stuff. I can't remember what they were playing. I think that was right around the time, was it 2002? I think that was right around the time. I think they were still in high school. Like, they might have been, like, seniors, and we had just graduated.
Okay.
But this was, like, 2002. So I want to say that's when, like, Thursday and, like, Take Finch and Sunday, stuff, like, Finch. Started gaining ground.
Yeah.
So they played kind of along those lines.
I gotcha.
But we kind of, like, we were all different, but we kind of all teamed up. And one day we just went, hey, we went over, like, we have nowhere to play. Like, there's no bars that we can play. Like, no, like, all of our high school friends can't go to bars to see us play. So right. We went over to the Roller Rooster, like, hey, you guys used to have shows here. We want to do it. And the owner, like, I used to work there when I was in high school. Me and Zinda worked through the laser tag.
Oh, awesome.
So we went to Tom, the guy who owned the place. I'm like, Tom, we want to run a show. He's like, all right, I'll do $2 a head for you guys. I'm like, it'll be $5 to get in. You guys get $2 for every person you bring. I'm like,
that awesome. Sounds
great. We started getting a ton of people. We had 500 people one show.
Holy shit.
Like, toward, like, I forget what group of bands it was. I can't remember if it was the end of Twine or it was, like, well, we're doing As You Stay Dies. But we had, like, 500 people one night. Because I remember, incredible. Like, each band walked away with, like, $300.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I mean, it was funny because we would start doing, like, the Roller Rooster was our cash show. Because, like, when we started it, so... Twine ended up folding, and I'm like, yeah, we need... And I started starting to take my guitar playing a lot more seriously.
Yeah.
But so it's still Zinda and I. Basically, when Twine folded, he and I wanted to keep doing it. I don't know what happened with Smurf's band and stuff at that point. He and I lost touch for a few years.
Okay.
But they kind of ended. Me, Zinda, and Heather wanted to start something, and we needed a drummer and a bass player. Well, no, we didn't. We needed a drummer and another guitar player. And that's when I ended up meeting Danny Durandis. We got introduced to him.
Yeah.
And, like, the Del Camps crew. So like we had this hard like metalcore idea. It was like right at the dawn of like the new wave of American heavy metal, like yeah. Chimera and Killswitch and yeah. Shadows Fall.
It was a good time.
Yeah, so like we brought it like, and then Andy Frost used to hang out with them too. So like he came in on guitar, header, and then like I had been taking my guitar player a lot more seriously, so I had like written our first song.
Oh, nice.
And we kind of built off that. So we had like 5 or 6 songs.
What's Header doing? Playing bass?
No, Header was playing guitar at the time.
I didn't even know you could play guitar.
Yeah, Zinda was on bass, Danny was on drums, I sang. We had a handful of our own originals. We played a few covers. Like, we did, like, some Lamb of God, like, Black Label.
Really?
We did Lamb of God. We did stuff off, like, the first Shadows Fall record. We did some Hatebreed.
Wow.
So, like, we did some metal, but we really focused more on that original aspect.
Yeah.
Because, like, with Twine, we wrote some songs. They were fucking terrible. Like, they were, like, embarrassing to play, but we played them anyway.
Hey, they're originals, man.
Yeah, right?
It's worth something. Yeah, so, for sure.
We were doing really well for ourselves as Each Day Dies. Like we were packing the Roller Roost. Like
that's incredible.
But we started being able to get in contact with bands out of the area.
Oh wow!
And so like we got offered a show at Croc Rock in Allentown. We just kept calling places. We're like, where can we get in? How do we get in here? And somehow our name got to them. They're like, yeah, we have an opening for Vanilla Ice. And I'm like, what?
That's incredible.
So we
opened. Was it Vanilla Ice or was it Rob Van Winkle?
It was Vanilla Ice when he was new metal.
Oh, all right, crazy. I remember.
It was so bad. But we opened that show. It was a lot of fun. We got asked back. We ended up meeting like the band Throttle from Reading. They pretty much opened like every local show down in Allentown, it seemed.
Okay.
Then we ended up meeting up with them down there. And then they invited us down to the Silo. And we kind of just made friends with them. And so we kind of did, like, the, like, Lehigh Valley, Burks, like, Silo, Croc Rock here while trying to record.
Yeah. How old are you at this point?
So I was, I guess, this was 2003. So I'd have been about 20.
Damn.
20, maybe just almost 21.
It's incredible. You pack so much shit in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, it still has that time of, like, where it's like, hey, 2000 was 20 years ago, but 1990 was also 20 years ago. So it's like there's that big blur in the end there. So we really were doing well in, like, I want to say 2004 into early 2005 with As Each Day Dies.
Okay.
Our biggest thing that we got to do was Goodfellas had the Misfits in 2005. This was, like,
I think I remember this.
Probably one of our last shows with As Each Day Dies. I honestly don't remember why we ended up breaking up. I honestly can't remember why. I think it just kind of, like, petered out. Like, we weren't doing anything. Shows started to kind of dry up. People stopped kind of coming out for a little bit. And we got wind that the Misfits were playing at Goodfellas. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
So, and obviously it wasn't like the real Misfits, but Jerry Only was there.
Jerry.
It was Jerry, Descadena, and Marky Ramone. Yeah. So it was like basically punk rock all-stars.
That's pretty
like
awesome.
Ramones, Black Flag, and the Misfits.
Yeah.
So we go down to Goodfellas. We're like, yo, we are like the only, that we knew of. We're the only original band in the area. I know there was, like, people coming up, but there was a lot of cover bands and stuff at the time, too.
Right.
But, like, still playing metal. I can't remember who else was around at the time, but we were the only ones that I thought would fit the bill.
Would Bobby D's Defend Your Own?
This was pre-Defend Your Own.
Oh, okay. Yes. All right.
Bob actually played guitar for us in As Each Day Dies briefly.
Oh, really?
Before we ended up folding, yeah. We went down to Goodfellas. I didn't know anything about Goodfellas. All I know is they sometimes get 80s fans there.
Right.
But it was still new at the time. Like, yeah. The warehouse was still new. So, like, I go in and I'm like, yo, who do I need to talk to? What do we got to do? What are we to get on this show? And that's why I met Mike Plata. And he's like, I told him, I'm like, yo, we'll do anything you need us to get on the show. Like, Misfits, this is huge for us.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, we need openers. You guys can, he's like, you got to sell tickets. And I'm like, all right. We sold 500 tickets for that show.
Holy
shit. And they were like almost $30 a pop.
Holy shit. Yeah.
So like at the time, though, this was 2005. So this is early 2005. I worked at FYE at the time.
Okay.
And the manager at the FYE at the Schuylkill Mall, he was really big into music. Like he worked with like Backstreet Law and stuff like that, like the big bar bands.
Yeah.
And I
forgot that name.
Yeah.
Until you said it.
And like Panacea and stuff like those bar bands.
Yeah.
And he hooked me up. He's like, yo, he got posters made for us for the show,
man.
With like the Misfits and our bands on it and stuff. So we had them all over the area. We fucking leafleted cars. We called everyone and their parent, like, yo, we need, but we ended up selling about 500 tickets for
that's
show.
That's incredible.
And I've never seen Goodfellas so packed. And it was like the first all age show there too.
Oh man.
That I'm aware of anyway. And the funny thing, like the solution of the all eight shows, I'm like, this is gonna be a train wreck. Was we put a chain link fence down the directly down the middle of the floor to separate the bar from the all age side.
I'm Sounds like someone's getting choked.
I'm like, all right, cool. So we've been playing some great shows. Like, we were making a bunch of friends. That was kind of like the pinnacle of As Each Day Dies. Like, we opened that Misfit show, and our, like, the first two bands that opened, it was, you know, Brian Devitt?
No, I know DeWitt, but I don't know Devitt.
So they had the Sum was their band.
Okay.
I think they were like an alt rock something band.
I think the name's been brought up on the show.
Yeah,
I honestly
don't remember what they played, and there was some like cover band that opened.
Okay.
I remember that, like, this is, do you remember the Purple Page, the Republican like BBS message board?
God, that sounds familiar, but
it was like the 4chan of like Schuylkill County at the time, because it was just complete trash, and someone tried to start like a war between like my band and the like As Each Day Dies and the Sum, like like, all our fans are going on here, like, talking all this trash. I'm like, and, like, then, like, we're getting a bunch of heat. I'm like, yo, I don't even know these guys. I'm like, I know them in passing, but I don't even know these guys. Let's calm down.
That's hilarious.
Like, it was like, we're going to fight you if they don't play with the Misfits. I'm like, yo, we're on the bill. That's cool, guys. But the day of the show, like, I'm like, this is your solution for all age? I'm like, okay, this will be interesting.
Yeah.
We had our one song we opened with that was, like, straight, like, right out the gate, like, boom.
Yeah.
Into, like, this huge, like, breakdown. And as soon as, like, our first, like, chord hits, that fence got pushed from the middle all the way against the wall, and a huge pit just opened up in front of the stage. So, like, we're playing, like, it's just pits all over the place.
That's so awesome.
There's people, like, getting in fights because, like, all the old-timers that don't know what moshing is are, like, thinking kids are, like,
fighting. Yeah.
It was chaos. I remember during in the middle of our set, Glada calls me over to the side of the stage, like, Andy. I'm like, what? He's like, can you calm these guys down and let them save her for the Misfits? I was like, no. But the coolest thing about that show, though, was, so we did the work. Like, I don't know what the other bands did. I don't know, like, how much they tried, but I know we sold the most tickets for the show. But Danny plays left-handed.
Okay.
And they were like, well, you guys all need to share kits. And we're like, we can't. I'm like, Danny plays left-handed.
Right.
He's like, well, you guys are going on first then. And I'm like, oh, no.
Right.
I'm like, no. We busted our ass. They're like, sorry, you guys are going on first. So we literally went to Jerry Only, told him what we did. And Jerry Only comes, he's like, come with me. He's like, yo, we're not playing it. These guys don't go on right before us.
Oh, my God.
So we got, like, vouched to go on direct support for the Misfits by Jerry Only.
And that's
like,
incredible.
Fucking incredible.
That is incredible.
But, yeah, so As Each Day Dies had kind of fizzled out. I literally don't remember why. I think we just kind of hit, like, a stagnant spot. We didn't really have any new ideas. We lost a guitar player. And I was like, you know what? Well, we can still write. But no one had any ideas. Like, I had, like, one song written, but we just couldn't practice. I think there might have been some work schedule stuff involved. It just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
Like, there was no bad blood or anything. Like, we didn't break up. It was just kind of fizzled out.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So about beginning of 2006, Drew Pavlik, who used to sing for that No Name Basis, and another buddy, Jake Custin. I don't know if you know him or not.
Yeah, I do.
You know Jake?
Yeah.
So they reached out to me about, they were like, hey, we want to start a new project. Are you interested in playing guitar? I hear you play. And I'm like, yeah, I'll listen. And they had like two songs written, but it was like, they wrote it all on Guitar Pro. So it sounded cool. It was more like the screamo-y, I'd say more like the screamo-y Glass Jaw, more type like that.
Like a Treyu kind of stuff?
Not even like that. No. More like that. I'd say more like the Finch. Okay. Like the heavier like emo bands.
Yeah.
But it sounded really cool on Guitar Pro.
Yeah.
Which
is really funny.
Yeah. It sounded like these progressions sound really cool. And then, but it did not translate to like real instruments. I'm like, dude, we're playing how you wrote it, but it doesn't sound like that. So we ended up, Danny wanted to play. We couldn't find a drummer at first. We tried a few dudes out. They didn't work out. And then Danny's like, yo, no, I want to play again. It's usually the eyes folded, but you know, I'm back into it. So Zinda was still with me at the time.
Okay.
So we formed Among Thy Saints, but Danny and I kind of hijacked it. Like, they had their song ideas, and then we kind of broke them apart, and we're like, well, these don't really translate well. Like, they sound cool when you tap them out, but like, when we actually play them, like, they just don't, it doesn't work.
Right.
So we kind of took some of the parts that we liked and kind of worked around that, kind of hijacked it and turned it into more of a metalcore band.
Nice.
So we did that at the beginning of 2006. That's when, like, I really, like, toward the end of Z Say Dies when I really started taking my guitar playing seriously. Like, I bought my first real guitar.
Okay. And what was that?
I was an ESP Viper 1000.
Oh.
Like, I remember it was right before I started taking lessons at Tom. I think Heather was taking lessons over at Tom Grice.
Okay.
And I went over there to meet him the one day because I was interested. And he had this beautiful ESP LTD EC 1000. There was quilted maple top, like a cherry red finish. I'm like, I want that. Yeah, I'm coming to buy that. So I'm like, Tom, I'll have the money. Like, I had just gotten, like, my student loan reimbursement. And, like, you know, I'm 21 years old. Like, I'm spending this on a guitar. I'm not saving this for my future or putting it back and reducing my loans. So I go over, oh, Andy, sorry, someone bought it over the week. I'm like, you son of a bitch. I'm like, so I went on Musician's Friend, and I'm like, I'm trying to find that guitar. I'm like, I was in love with it. They didn't have any of them. But they had the Viper, which is like the SG shape. Yeah. And I'm like, you know what? I bought it. It was the same exact – it was like Flame Maple, EMG 81s, that cherry red finish.
Yeah.
Ordered it, and I fell in love with it instantly.
Still have it?
Yep, that's still my go-to.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's still my favorite. Like, it's my first real guitar, and it's my first – like, it's still, like, my go-to.
That's awesome.
But, like, I didn't know anything. Like, I'm like, shit, I need an amp.
Right.
Like, I borrowed an amp from a friend, and I'm like, I need a rig. So, like, me and Jake went up, and, like, I went and tried so many amps. I'm like, because I don't know what I want. I don't want a piece of shit like everyone had the Marshall MGs
right
at the time because it was like $100 for like a full stack.
Right.
But it sounded like a bunch of angry bees. It's like you turn the gain up and now it's like it's like the end like the early Line 6 spiders and stuff.
Oh my god. Yeah. I still see them everywhere.
Yeah, and it's like it's just they sound terrible. Like they literally hurt.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what? If I'm getting in this for the real, I'm like I want to make an investment.
Yeah.
So I've tried out Marshalls, I tried out PVs, I tried out with Dyma, just put out the Krankenstein amp, like he was with Krank. I'm glad I didn't go, but like I was really close to buying one of those, but luckily I didn't, and then that brand ended up tanking when Dime died.
Yeah,
but like their amps were also garbage. They ended up turning out to be really shit amps. I think Fody had one that caught on fire.
Oh my god.
You'd have to tell that story, but I'm pretty sure it was either a Krank Revolution or a Dime. I think he said it caught on fire.
Oh my god. That's terrible.
So I ended up on a Mesa Boogie triple rec. I used to remember seeing them on stage of all my favorite bands. I'm like, the Mesa Boogie it is. And then I bought like a $3,000 guitar rig. We'll make it $10 an hour. And I bought
regrets.
Yeah. And I bought another guitar. I bought a Fernandez. I don't know why I bought a Fernandez. Probably because I was really into 18 Visions at the time. That's what they played. They played Fernandez's. But they didn't have the Les Paul style one that I really wanted. It was almost like a BC Rich Mockingbird.
Okay.
But it was a Fernandez Revel Deluxe, I believe.
It was that?
No, that I sold. That guitar sounded amazing, but it was difficult to play.
No.
Now, I don't know if it was actually difficult to play or just I didn't know how to set a guitar up at the time other than change strings.
Yeah.
Like, if I had it today, I probably would be able to make it work.
I gotcha.
It sounded amazing. Like, it was like Les Paul weight, so it was a thick heavy boy.
Yeah.
And it sounded great. So there were my two, my Viper 1000 and this Fernandez. I actually kicked myself in the ass because I would do the reverse these days. That it had Duncan JB's and 59 set in it, and I swapped it out for EMG 8185. Like, everyone was that was the thing to do.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna cut those Duncans these days. So we started making progress really quick with Among My Saints, and I think about 4 months after we formed, we went and recorded our first EP.
Holy shit.
Up in Middleburg. There's a dude named Josh Zering at a little farm studio. I forget how we got turned on to him. Probably, I think, from the dude at FYE, Barrett, because he was friends with him. Because, like, this dude, like, grew up with, like, the Breaking Benjamin guys and stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, he went to, like, high school with, like, Ben Burnley and shit.
Oh, shit.
So, like, he had his own little setup in, like, a farmhouse out, and, like, we joked, we called it Metalburg. So it was, like, middle of farm country out by, like, past, like, Bucknell University, and it's, like, Sealands Grove area. So we recorded our first EP. This is when MySpace started, like, getting big.
Okay.
We put our EP up, and within, like, less than a week, we had over, like, 50,000 plays on MySpace.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it blew up really quick. And then we started getting in contact with a bunch of other bands out of the area. Like, we remember we had our friends in Throttle down in Reading. Like, they were bringing us down to the Silo. We were at Croc Rock, too. Then we started making contacts with some other people and getting shows out, like, Central PA, up in Scranton. We made friends with a band called The Storm. And, like, they had, like, their own hardcore scene up in the Scranton area. They'd invite us up there. So, like, we were doing really well.
Yeah.
Over that summer, we had a falling out with our guitar player, Jake, and we ultimately had to leave him go. And then Zinda left too because he had moved down to the Harrisburg area, and he's like, you know what? I just don't, you know, wasn't for him anymore.
Right.
Plus the travel. So then we're like, all right, well, we need to, like, we're getting good traction. Like, we need another guitar player. We need another bass player. So that's when I met a dude named Zach Campbell. He was a high school kid at the time. He was like a senior. We were like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Fantastic guitar player.
Yeah.
Like, phenomenal. And he was really into the metalcore stuff. Like, we met him because his band, he had a fledgling band that opened up for us one time at the Roost. I remember now how I meet him. He came, he broke his collarbone in a wall of death we did at the Roller Roost.
That's awesome.
And like, that's how I ended up meeting him. Cause so like, he came, he's like, hey man, I broke my collarbone in your pit. And I'm like, that's awesome. But, so we ended up, we brought him in and we needed a bass player. So I'm like, yo, Heather, are you interested in playing? Like, I had Zinda's rig. I'm like, you just got to be at a bass cause Heather plays left-handed.
Yeah.
So he's like, yeah, man. So Heather joined up right after that. We got booked. There was this PA Metal Fest out in, Lewisburg.
Okay.
So it was like full-blown chaos and a bunch of bands from like Pittsburgh and New York. And we had I cannot remember the name of the dude who had, he had like a little like production company that he was starting to run shows like out in that Lewisburg area. Because there was like a community center we always get booked at out there. But I go back and I look at, I found some of the flyers the one time. I'm like, we came as Romans. We played with like Car Bomb and stuff. I'm like, holy shit, we played with these guys? Like, I don't really like We Came as Romans. But, like, they got huge.
Yeah.
Because, like, I was just recently got back into Car Bomb. And, like, I love, they're awesome. Like, that progressive, like, tech, core, whatever.
Yeah.
I went on our MySpace the one day and there was, like, we still have some flyers on there. I'm like, wait, we played with Car Bomb? That's incredible. Like, that's fucking awesome.
That's incredible.
So, we were doing really well with Among Thy Saints and. We recorded our second EP. The songs were so much better. We got better writing and we're getting some really good traction. And then in early 2007, our singer decided that he wanted to, he's like, you know what? I want to go back to school.
Hmm.
And he was working a job to try to pay off some stuff to do it. And it would always like take him away. Yeah. So it was like a travel job that he would be like, go to park for events. Cause his dad had some contact.
Okay.
So like, he'd be flying all over the country to help do these like parking for concerts and NASCAR events and shit.
Oh, wow.
So, like, he was gone a lot. So he ended up deciding to leave. And I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I guess it'd probably be easier to find another guitar player than it would to find singing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, screw it. I'll go sing because I can still write.
Right.
But, and then Danny decided he wanted to go to school then too. So kind of all folded then at that point. And that was it for a few years. Like, I mean, that was probably like, not that I'm not proud of my current bands, but like we did a lot of really good and a lot of small amount of time.
Yeah.
And I'm to this day I'm so bummed to not see where it went.
Yeah.
Like if we would have just stuck with it and said, hey, we'll find new replacements.
Right. The what ifs.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But at that time I'm like, well, everyone's failing. I guess I gotta get a real job now. Because like I was working at the I ended up not working at the record store anymore for some bullshit. I had a meth head boss that got me fired for some bullshit. So and then I think he ended up getting like arrested for ripping the store off. So, joke's on you, FYE.
Which folded so long ago.
Yeah, so... But then I'm like, I guess I gotta get a real job. So I didn't do anything for a while. I mean, I still played. I worked on my guitar playing.
Yeah.
Kind of got better over the years. And then... I can't remember how the Kissing Booth came about. So around 2010 or so.
Okay. So definitely some time passes.
Yeah, a few years had passed. And Fulton and I don't remember how it happened, came about, but we ended up starting, like, let's do a party band.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just make some money, have some fun. Originally, I was playing guitar with it.
Okay.
So it was me, Fulton, Jay Dembinski, Jay Bird sang for it.
Yeah.
Danny Kosholski playing drums. So basically, it was like Cyanide Sunrise plus me.
Yeah.
And their original drummer and who do we have on bass? Dan Dull. So we just did party stuff, but we did, like, the Punk Goes Pop. Kind of before that was a thing. Like
okay.
We were taking like hip hop songs and stuff and adding breakdowns to them.
That's awesome.
And just doing like a handful of songs we wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like we do like Poker Face by Lady Gaga. But like a rock version with like a breakdown.
Yeah.
But then we would do like an Alkaline Trio song.
That's so awesome.
That was fun for a while. What was really cool about that is Danny's a fantastic drummer.
Yeah.
And he was able to, he would go and rip out like the samples of songs. He had like one of those SPDS pads for his drum kit.
Okay.
That he would pull out the samples of like certain pop songs, yeah. Like the key sides and stuff. and we'd be able to play that loop, and we would then play the guitars to it. So like, we would have that like extra, like that extra something.
Yes.
So like, if their song had like a synth line to it, we had that.
That's so awesome.
Because we did like that, like a G6 song, that Far East Movement. It was a terrible like Korean like rap song that was like really popular at the time.
Okay.
But he pulled like the synth line and everything out of it, and we just added guitars to it and stuff, and like this ridiculous breakdown at the end.
That's
it was
awesome.
Fucking awesome. So we're doing really well. We played all around here. We were out in like down at Hershey here. Like Rob Hampton would help us out, get a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And he actually, I filled in for the Pop Star Monkeys for 2 shows on vocals.
Oh, shit.
Because of Hampton. That was a nice chunk of change.
I bet.
But so, like, we were starting out, and then Jay Bird decided to, he wanted to go focus on Cyanide Sunrise, but these guys didn't want to do that.
Okay.
So, like, that was when, like, the final iteration, like, the solidified touring lineup of Cyanide Sunrise had come about. So I went to vocals, and Steve just stayed on guitar by himself for a while, but then Dan Dole was playing guitar, and then Bob Budash came in and played bass with us. For probably most of it then.
All right.
So we had a good time. It was like about two or three years or so. We had a good time playing around the area. And, you know, it was a little something different than all the other run-of-the-mill cover bands. Because, like, you have the same band still playing the same freaking songs over and over again.
Still.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah, like, I keep joking. Like, if I have to play with my own Worst Enemy one more time, I'm going to blow my brains out on stage.
You still hear a lot of bands playing Get Bored by Deftones. Like,
yeah.
Still.
So
it's been a long time.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, guys, we can play some different songs.
Right.
But, like, that's what we did. We would play, like, stuff on Top 40. We would do, like, our own version of it. And then...
That's really cool.
We would just do a few... Like, we did, like, Miss Murder by AFI and stuff.
All right.
We did a Day to Remember song one time. We did Du Hast by Rammstein. I'm like, yo, I actually know it in German, so...
That's awesome.
I bought that CD. I remember when I was, like, 10 or maybe 12 when that album came out, Sensuck.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing, like, the video on... I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Because it was so heavy.
Yeah.
And German.
And super German,
but I remember I was... My buddy, whose brother turned me on to, like, Cannibal Corpse and stuff, like, we had gone to an airport to pick one of his brothers up or something.
Okay.
I went with him and his dad to pick one of his brothers up. And in, like, the airport gift shop was, like, the, like, European version of Sensuck. And I'm like, Rammstein, I'm going to buy that. And I'm like, it's fucking awesome. But, like, I knew, like, the word, like, I know what most of them mean, but, like, I know the German words, or at least fake it enough, but, yeah. Like, we did some just off-the-wall stuff, it worked, but, you know, just as everything else, our drummer, Danny, decided he tried to be a session drummer in New York.
Okay.
So he tried to, like, make drumming his career outside of just being in a band.
Yeah.
So when we lost him, we lost that extra special stuff, because we lost all our samples.
Mm.
The drummer we brought in, I don't remember, Mike Morton? I think his name was. He was a buddy of Fulton's. Great rock drummer.
Yeah.
But, like, we lost that. He didn't have that metal knowledge. He didn't have... Because, like, we'd be like, hey, let's do this, but let's do, like, a two-step beat to it. And he'd be like...
Right.
Huh?
Right.
I'm like, we're going to do a breakdown here. And we're like, but he wouldn't know to, like, follow the guitar chugs with the bass drum. And I'm like, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So it ended up kind of calling it quits. And then about a year or so later, this might have been 2012... 13, somewhere around there. I was always buddies with the guys in Faith in Exile. Like, I've been friends with them for a long time.
Rob Allison,
Ron Gabala, and Alan Beener. Like, I knew those guys a long time. Like, we played together at the Roller Roost often. Like, I think I got Rob's band Thrown Clear, like, their first show at the Roller Roost when we had Twine still.
Oh, shit.
And I remember when they first formed...
Rob's a little bit younger, right?
Yeah, he's, like, I think 3 years younger than
me. Okay.
I remember when they first started Faith in Exile, they approached me at when I was working at FYE if I was interested in singing for them. And it was right when we started as Among Thy Saints. I was like, I can't do it. But also, I was kind of like over singing at that point. Like, I wanted to play guitar.
Yeah.
So they started off on their path. We started off on our path. But around 2012, 13, 14, somewhere around there, they approached me about, they're like, hey, we want to do this 90s tribute. Fody doesn't want to do it. Are you interested? And I was like, yeah, man. Fody wasn't into it, from what I'm told. I mean, I can see Fody saying that.
Yeah, but, no, I'm going to have Fody on the show. I'm going to ask him.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was like an Alice in Chains tribute. Fody would have been like, yes.
Yeah.
I guess he didn't want to do all the random 90s crap. So, but they asked me to join up. So I was like, yeah. So we did that for like about 2 years or so. It was a lot of fun. Like,
and it was Faith in Exile, but not Fody.
It was Faith in
Fody.
Exile minus Fody plus me.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, so... We did that for about two years or so, and then Faith started gaining some real traction with their new music.
Yeah.
They were getting looked at by some labels. Like, they were playing, like, the Mayhem Fest and shit up in Wilkes, up in Scranton.
Oh, yeah.
they're doing really awesome for themselves. So obviously the cover band wasn't priority.
Gotcha.
So, and it kind of just, you know, same deal. It's like, you know, they're obviously, I completely understand they're going to focus on their band that could possibly get signed. So absolutely. Yeah, go for it, guys. So after that folded, I kind of just didn't do anything for a bit. Like, I still worked on my guitar playing. I still play.
Yeah.
But I didn't, like, I got really into gear, like,
okay.
over those few years. Like, I think I probably have one of the sickest rigs of anyone in the
area. That's awesome.
Because I'm such a gear nerd, and I don't know how I ended up getting that way. It's probably because I didn't know what I was doing with my tube amps and stuff, and I needed to learn how to do it. And, like, yeah. I joined this Mesa Boogie forum, and, like, I learned so much. And I'm like, holy shit, the tones I can get now. I just kind of dicked around. I still learned songs I played. I still wrote riffs here and there.
Yeah.
But I just, like, I felt, like, so out of touch. Because I was getting older, no one was really playing
right.
for a long time. Like, there was a big gap of time where there really wasn't any bands.
Local scene was definitely suffering around that yeah. time. There's bands that are still around now that were, like, bigger cover bands,
mm-hmm.
you know, block party kind of bands, but the like, little guy was not around at that time.
Yeah, like, the original scene was dying out. Like, Faith in Exile, I think Pale Harvest was still around for a bit, but they were, like, the only two that I can really think of. Because there was Aaron Charles, where Zach went after Among Thy Saints. Like, they were doing well for themselves. They're like the now the city, like Eddie's band and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, those guys, like, all had kind of started moving on because, like, everyone was getting old. Like, even those guys were starting to, like, get older and doing different things.
Right.
So there was, like, this gap in time between, like, I feel like it was probably, like, 2015 to, like, 2000, like, maybe 17 or so that, like, no one, I felt like, I mean, it could have just been me and not going out to places. I don't know.
Yeah.
I felt like kind of a recluse for a bit.
I gotcha.
But it felt like no one was really doing anything. I was like, you know what? I'm going to work on my playing. Maybe I'll write stuff myself. Danny and I would jam here and there. Every now and then I'd find people to, like, attempt to join to jam something.
Yeah.
Like, after Among Thy Saints, I jammed with a few friends and just kind of went nowhere. So I just got my own, like, recording stuff at home. Like,
okay.
I just started learning how to dick around and stuff. I still don't know how to use it. But, but I can jam out on my computer at least. But about, I guess, a little over 2 years ago now, like, I guess Tusco was on its way out, and Smurf had reached out to me. He's like, hey, Tusco's kind of not working out right now. I'm interested in starting something new, or would you be interested in playing? And in singing, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Like, dude, I haven't been in a band for a few years. Like, I don't care. I honestly, and I've told, like, Smurf knows this, so this isn't, like, a bomb drop or anything, but,
right.
like, I don't love singing anymore.
Yeah.
Like, being a front man when you're in your 30s is a lot different than when you were in your 20s. And playing different types of venues. Like, when you're playing an all-age show and kids are killing each other in front of you, it's a lot easier to be a front man.
Yeah.
But when you're playing at a bar and a handful of people and you're playing, like, extreme metal, people are just kind of staring at you.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's hard. I mean, some people might be fine with it, but, like, I feed off the energy of the crowd.
Right.
So if, like, everyone else is boring, I'm like, all right.
I can see that.
Well, this next song is blah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. I mean, like, I still try to do the best. I still try to, like, you know, I still try to go nuts as I can. And
yeah.
But it's just not the same.
I can definitely,
like,
see that.
I prefer playing guitar these days, but, like, I love the stuff we're doing with Hands Resist. But so Smurf reached out to me. We got together. We wrote about 5 songs or so. And we played our first show in, I want to say, April of, like, 2018.
Okay.
We played our first show down in Allentown with some bands that Smurf knows.
I love it. Smurf just gets fucking right out of the area. I love it.
My favorite thing ever of that show was I had not played a show in quite some time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, practice is fine, but I had never played a show in that song. And, like, our first song, I went absolutely ballistic. I'm, like, jumping all over the place and, like, just acting like a madman.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, toward the end of the first song, like, during Fody solo, like, I'm going to die. I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, I'm not going to make it through the set. And I'm like, I need to dial it back a little bit. So I, like, took a breather. It's kind of like when you go hiking sometimes. Like, sometimes if you go hiking, there's, like, a major hill climb right off the bat. You're like, oh, why did I do this?
Especially if you haven't been out hiking in
a
while.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, why did I do this? But, like, after you get past it and you just basically get warmed up, it's fine.
Yeah,
like, it's absolutely. Really not that bad. So I pulled it back a second. I took a quick breather. And then the rest of the show went great.
Awesome.
So, like, we played all around. Like, we were down in Philly. We were up in Scranton. We were Wilkes-Barre area. We played a lot north a lot.
Yeah.
Philly a few times. But it was, like, great. Like, we're writing, just trying to build a little bit of a following.
Yeah.
We didn't really get anything recorded yet. But okay. We're just going on word of mouth and just kind of, you know, testing the waters.
Gotcha.
So a bunch of months later, we had played a Halloween show at Trippin' Billy's.
Okay.
And Ron and Fody, because we got Ron Gabala in who's, you know, Faith in Exile.
Yeah.
With Fody. And they're like, yo, we want to get back with Faith. Are you interested in playing guitar? And I'm like, yeah. So, and it's like the same band. So it's like, it's like we just minus and plus a few different people.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, because I was really wanting to get back into guitar. I'd really been working on my playing at that time. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's do this. So they asked me to join up. And I played my first show with them last year in April. That's so April awesome. 2019 was like the return of Faith in Exile. We had like almost 200 people at Strikers. It was awesome.
I fucking missed that show. I wanted to go so bad. I did watch some videos online. That was incredible.
Dude, it was awesome. And then like the thing that's bummer is that like the following week we had a show at Goodfellas because like Rob Hampton was briefly like in control of the warehouse. So okay. He was trying to turn it around, but I won't get into that.
All right.
We went to Michael like, hey, or like we want to do a metal show here one night. So we're like right off the coattails of Return of Faith. I'm like, yo, we'll do Hands Resist and Faith in Exile. We should be able to draw off the wave of that first show.
Yeah.
Because we had a band from West Virginia called Horseburner.
Okay.
And they're fantastic. They're like stoner metal, like Mastodon type.
Yeah.
They're so awesome. Such talented dudes. And then another like similar band from Philly called Brain Candle.
Okay.
And those guys are amazing too that we've met through like Hands Resist and Smurfs, known them for years. So, show fizzled because Trip and Billy's decided to have their last night that night.
Ooh.
So, that kind of killed our momentum. Because, like, Final Night, like, they had Japan 4 and, like, all those bands that, like, were drawing at that stuff.
Right.
So, like, coincide with who wants to go see an original metal show now.
Right.
At Goodfellas, of course. Here's the stigma of Goodfellas. So, I would have loved to see what happened with the show had we actually not had that competition that night.
Yeah.
But I felt bad for the bands coming out. I mean, we still had like 50 some people, which is, I think, good for good.
Yeah, I think so too.
But,
I played there a couple times. It's not.
Yeah. So basically it would just be kind of split in time between both bands. And that's kind of where we're at today.
All right.
So there's the quick history of Andy Hare.
That's really awesome. You fucking killed it. What do you got going forward?
So right now, we are working on the Hands Resist EP.
Okay, awesome.
Our debut EP. We were in the studio right before all this Corona stuff happened. All
right.
So, right as this all hit, I was supposed to be doing my vocals.
Yeah.
So, I got one of my vocal tracks done remotely, but we got all the final mixes done of the music. So, now I bought a studio mic at home, and I'm just going to do them myself.
Oh, nice.
So, and then send them up to the dude to mix. Because that's what's nice about technology.
It's really the most beautiful thing about our time right now.
Yeah, so, like, I bought, like, a Shure SM7B, and it was, like, the standard.
Yeah.
So, like, that every vocal mic uses, podcast, music, whatever.
Yep.
So, like, I got one of those, so I just got the final mixes the other day. So, I'm going to start working on my track so we can finally get this out.
Awesome.
So, we do have one song out, or not out, I should say, ready.
Yeah.
To go whenever we want to drop a single. But we were supposed to have a video to go along with it and all this stuff, but then the Corona hit and just kind of put the kibosh on everything.
It's incredible. Anything with Faith in Exile?
Yeah, so we're writing a new album there too.
Okay.
We have a bunch of riffs. We have like two full songs done. We have a bunch of riff ideas we've been sharing back and forth over the past few months since we haven't really been able to get together.
Yeah.
So, we have a lot of stuff coming up, writing new music. Hands Resist too. Like, hopefully we get the EP out in the not too distant future so we can get that out in the world. I'm really proud of how it's sounding.
It's awesome. I can't wait to hear it.
And so far so good.
That's awesome.
But that's what we're doing. I'm still like learning new shit too. Like, I took this time of the Corona, like, I've always been that, like I said a little bit before, I've always been more of that rhythm player.
Yes.
And I've really gone back to more theory and like technical stuff that I've never been able to play, trying to get into that.
It's awesome.
So, because like I want to shred. I would love to be able to shred. Like, my biggest win over, like, the Corona was I finally learned the beginning of Alaska by Between the Buried and Me.
Oh, man.
Like, that, I mean, it's sloppy, but it's there for the most part. It felt good enough to post online, so. But I'm like, I've never really been good at sweet picking. I've never really been good at soloing, stuff like that. If it's, like, a bluesy thing, I can jam, but, like, I've always been more of a rhythm. I'm trying to break out of that.
Yeah.
But I got
good for you, man.
Yeah, like.
I'm too scared.
Yeah, it was funny. The one day, like, I was working. I'm like, you know what? This is going to be my goal. I'm going to learn the beginning of Alaska, and then I'm going to go from there. And then the one day, I was just recording myself playing it just to see what I was doing. And then the one I watched, I'm like, holy shit, I hit it.
That's awesome.
For the most part, I hit it. And I was happy about it. But so I've been going to, like, really working on my fundamentals lately and stuff.
Good. Excellent. So last segment of the show is They're meant to be rapid-fire questions. Mm-hmm. I don't really want you to think about it.
All right.
Just kind of answer. You can totally pass. All you got to do is say pass.
All right.
All right. Especially the last one. All right. First concert.
Aerosmith.
Name a Beatles song.
What, I've just seen a face.
All right. Favorite concert.
Favorite concert? Ooh. That's going to be difficult. Every Time I Die with It Dies Today, Haste the Day, and A Life Once Lost at the Crowbar State College.
Oh, damn.
That was fantastic. A deep
cut. Favorite local band, past or present?
Favorite local band? Probably Crowbar. I mean, they just really did something different.
And, yeah, for sure.
I love those guys.
Guilty pleasure.
I'm starting to listen to more stuff like Cardi B.
I love the honesty. What was the last thing that you listened to?
Last thing I listened to on the way over here was the new Black Crown Initiate album that came out on Friday.
Okay. What would you, Andy, tell me to listen to right now?
The new Black Crown Initiate album. It's awesome, like proggy, death, melodic, crazy stuff.
Awesome. That's actually like my favorite question of the whole show because I get to hear new stuff. What's your favorite 80s song?
Favorite 80s song is probably... There's so many. So, fun fact, I like a lot of 80s new wave.
Yeah.
So, I'm probably going to go with Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen.
Classic. Totally classic. Last question. What song or album did you lose your virginity to?
None.
No,
there was no music at the time. Right.
Thank you so much, Andy. I appreciate your time.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Steve Miller Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Miller. This episode was edited by Josh Iverson. Music was used with permission by our guest. Keep an eye out for our next episode wherever you listen.